From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for Mother's Day weekend 2019. There are all kinds of activities to help you celebrate Mom's Day, but brunch is always a winner. Okay, Sunday evening, Cher brings her latest retirement tour to the Forum. What mom wouldn't love tickets to that? Well, I can think of one. The Brew Crew is in Chicago for the weekend, and your Milwaukee Bucks continue their drive for the NBA championship. Today's theme is, what's wrong with these people? Remember the old axiom, the family that steals together stays together?
Good Lord.
No, well, neither do I. A 27-year-old Arizona mom was scolding her 7-year-old son in the middle of a store for not being a very good lookout. The 7-year-old was to keep his eyes peeled while grandma went shoplifting. You can't make this stuff up. Well, the scolding drew the attention of an off-duty cop, and mom and granny are awaiting trial. What's wrong with these people? And a California teen was being prosecuted in the San Diego Superior Courthouse on multiple charges of graffiti vandalism. He promised the judge he would never do that again. Well, that evening, he got arrested for tagging the very same San Diego Superior Courthouse. What's wrong with these people? In the studio, we have Brian Kilb, Adam Bailey, Joel Dreesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks, Max. The relatively calm upward trend of the stock market this year was interrupted this week after the trade war with China took a turn, with the boosting of tariffs on $200 billion of Chinese goods. For much of the year, the market seemed to have been slowly pricing in a positive resolution to the dispute, but that may now be thrown into question. Trade negotiations did recommence this week, but it wasn't enough to turn the markets back into positive territory. And it appears that the trade conflict will once again take center stage for investors. As investors shunned risk and volatility spiked, long-term treasury rates continued their move lower on the year by trading below 2.5%. Of course, we saw the market open considerably lower this morning before rallying a bit through the end of the day. Friday's positive close for the Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ, however, not enough to turn stocks positive for the week. For the week, the NASDAQ down 3% to close today at 79.17. The S&P 500 down 2.2% on the week to close today at 28.82. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 560 points this week, but up 116 today to close at 25.945. For the year, including dividends, the NASDAQ up 19.7%, the S&P 500 up 15.7%, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 12%. Brian, Adam, obviously a rough week with the trade war with China, I think, in the news for much of the week, with the expectation for so much of the year that we were going to get there, that we were finally going to get something done. And then overnight, we have now the tariffs go into place on $200 billion in goods. Potentially could be, if we have this in place for the full year, the largest amount of money taken in on customs that we've seen as a percentage of GDP since the 1930s. And so, I think a lot of potential impact, not just for investors, but for the economy more broadly. I wonder, maybe Brian, first of all, if you've got any thoughts on kind of what's going on with the trade war.
You know, Kyle, oddly enough, I got a bunch of thoughts. But, you know, I think a big part of our job is to kind of help people filter through the stuff that matters and the stuff that doesn't matter. So for all the things that don't really, I tried to dismiss, China does matter, you know, and I think it matters not just in that, you know, the math is the math, and you know, if we start raising the stakes on both sides of the ocean, that it's going to be harmful for everybody. But I also think it matters because, in the long run, we got to find a way to get along, you know. So I do think it's worth paying attention to, unlike so many other things that become newsworthy these days. As to the situation itself, you have some sense how much was built into the market for the optimistic outlook on China that things would get resolved. I also think it was maybe a little naive of us to think that this thing was going to get done in a tidy and clean manner. So I had to kind of laugh a little bit today when the president said they had a congenial conversation today after all, you know, that happened this week. And maybe that may be true. And I've read some positive comments that that talks are still moving forward, whatever. I just think it's probably a little early yet to be overly optimistic, and yet this week overly pessimistic, but before we see how this thing really gets resolved. So we'll see what happens. I think it's too early yet to throw in the towel. It was good that we rallied a little bit today, and we'll take it from here, right?
Yeah, and I think a lot of posturing about where we ultimately end up here, and I think important for investors to remember how this impacts them, right? A big question always is, well, okay, but how do these tariffs ultimately impact me? And important to understand that these are increased costs on a number of goods that are sold here in the U.S., and so that falls on one of two plates. It's either on the plate of the consumer in the form of higher prices, or it comes down to the corporations that are making and selling these goods in the form of reduced profits. And we saw, that one of the biggest technology companies out there, Apple, I've seen estimates now that this could increase the cost of an iPhone from anywhere from $120 to $160. And so who's going to eat those costs? Is it the investors by way of lower earnings, or is it the consumer by way of higher inflation? Either way, that hurts. Either way, that's something that, we need to figure out a way to resolve. Because that's going to drive earnings lower. That's going to drive the economy to slow down a little bit from where we are. And so, I'm encouraged by the fact that, maybe we can get a little bit of additional progress here. I'm encouraged by the fact that the markets seem to have, at least for now, shrugged some of that off. They had priced in most of, I think, the negative news. And yet, I think we've got a ways to go before we really see a final outcome here.
And also at the end of the day, I mean, you have to have at some point a trade deal with your biggest trading partner. You just can't go on forever without one. And it's a solvable problem. It's a fixable issue. And it's good to see politicians still re-engaging after all of this, because you saw the market midweek reacting kind of in a knee-jerk fashion to the tweets that we saw. And to think that, China's going to abandon trade talks because of a Twitter comment, I think, is a little bit crazy. But politicians still re-engaging in all of this, and at some point, we have to have a deal.
There's need on both sides. I mean, that's what you got to keep reminding yourself, that there's plenty of impetus for both sides to do something. And there's all kinds of optics in terms of who's getting the better deal and all that other stuff. So we got to be careful and make sure both sides appease their political bases and whatnot. But there is a strong need on both sides, which doesn't guarantee something will be done, but it certainly gives you some encouragement that we'll keep at this thing. Meanwhile, Kyle, the S&P's up 16% this year, even after all that. So let's not get too pessimistic on a beautiful Friday afternoon,
Yeah, absolutely. And, we've had one of the hotter IPO markets that we've had in a few years. We've had a number of companies that maybe historically wouldn't have gone public, but which are finding now ways to capitalize. Brian, I know it's a point that you've made a number of times that for a long time, companies have been focused on debt financing. Companies have been focused on financing in private equity markets. And it's, I think, a bit of a positive sign to see those companies more willing to go public, more willing to make the disclosures necessary to do that, more willing to open themselves up to the speculation that is, the typical investable market. And yet you have Uber launch today into maybe one of the rougher markets that we could have had with the China news, obviously, but also, just in the midst of, I think, what's been a pretty big shakeup for those companies that have lost hundreds of millions of dollars a year. You had Lyft earlier in the year come out. And I think, there are lessons to be learned for investors looking at some of these companies. Adam, I know you and I have had these conversations on this podcast. It seems like just a couple of weeks ago. I wonder, either of you, if you have any thoughts about kind of the Uber launch, but also just, looking at some of those newer companies that are out there.
Yeah, the lesson for retail investors on IPOs, don't. I mean, just stay away. I mean, that's pretty simple. I mean, you got to remember that in the months and weeks leading up to an IPO, companies go on these roadshows for no other purpose than to drum up business and hype. And there's a lot of hype built into the shares when they initially hit the market. Uber's a fantastic example of this. They were hoping to get somewhere between, I think, 45 and 55 bucks a share, give or take. And they ended up pricing at the low end of their range, 45. The moment it hit the market and retail investors could purchase it, it fell to 42. And tell you what, that's where it finished the day. So I think for retail investors, if you want to add some of these newer IPOs, you got to wait months. Let the hype wear off and then sit down and revisit. Does it fit with the rest of your investment strategy?
Decades ago, you would exploit information, right? You would find something that other people didn't know about. And that's what IPOs are all about. It's like, where's that company that nobody else knows about? Well, there aren't any companies that nobody else knows about anymore. You know, the stuff is out there and everybody's picking through it before anybody has a chance. And so, as you say, you know, by the time you actually get to push the buy button, it's way too late. Things have been, you know, are kind of old news, you know. So on the other hand, I think it's really encouraging, Kyle, that, you know, we talk so much about stock prices going up, but what about having more company stock to buy? You know, what about volume having? And I think the market can grow that way as well. And you and I have had this discussion a million times over the years, but, you know, there's so fewer public companies to buy than there were years ago. And why not start adding back to that opportunity set? And that's a way for markets to go to start trading out some of that debt over the last 10 years for equity.
Yeah, you know, Brian, I think I'm struck by the comment about, you know, buying those things which you know, you mentioned decades ago, maybe the roadshow, Adam, as you mentioned, was an opportunity to introduce the company that you were, you know, maybe for the first time trying to exploit some of that information for something you haven't seen before. The reality is that the reason that we get questions about these initial offers is because they're companies that people know. They're not, you know, the first exposure to some great tech stock as it was in the 2000s or you know, the first time that you're buying some pharmaceutical as you were in the 70s or the 80s, now it's, these are stocks that people have wanted to buy, or at least companies that people have wanted to participate in for years, sometimes decades. And for the first time ever now, they're able to. And so I think it's a little bit different in that regard, in that, you know, we always say buy what you know, or you know, some of the better investors always say buy what you know. And yet at the same time, you know, I think there's some reasons, Adam, as you mentioned, to wait.
I think that's how it's different to some degree is, back in the day, right? I get to say that now, right? Back in the day, you had financial people looking for financial opportunities. Now you got, you know, I get a call from a friend or a, you know, and hey, you know, this company makes electric cars. It's a really cool technology. I want to get in on that. Or yeah, I have a Facebook page. Let's buy that. Or I take this transportation to and from, you know, whatever. And those folks don't have any idea what the underlying financials are. You know, Tesla's blowing through so much cash right now. As a businessman, it seems like a pretty good stretch to invest in a company like that. But you know, if I'm driving around an electric car and I'm worried about the environment stuff, I think it's a really cool idea. Well, there's a difference between a really cool idea and a really good investment, and I think that's where we are these days.
Is there a mystique about this? I mean,
it's totally,
back in the day, was there some successful IPO that people just sort of point to that and say this could be the next XYZ?
Well, in reality, Joel, there's a number of successful IPOs today. I mean, when you look at the 51 deals that have launched so far this year, all but a couple of them have made lots of money for investors so far. The challenge is that the ones that have tended to make a lot of money are maybe the ones that weren't quite as hyped, the ones that weren't quite as well understood. That doesn't mean you should go chasing those deals, though, and it certainly doesn't mean that it's the right idea for, you know, the average investor. I think it requires an incredible amount of due diligence. It requires an incredible amount of really understanding what it is you buy, because there's so much nuance to this stuff. There's so much that can go wrong. And most investors don't need to take that kind of risk.
I think it's also good to sometimes leave it to the professionals, the fund managers. You know, for example, some large growth funds out there do have access to the private markets and, you know, many of these businesses before they come public. So that's one way you can gain exposure to it without doing it on your own.
Yeah, and maybe a final comment would be, you know, like one of those things that if everybody's doing it in this business, then don't do it. Because, you know, that's not how you make money. You know, somebody on the other side of the trade, if it's that popular, I'm staying away from
that's
it.
That's a nice momism for Mother's Day weekend.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, we've spent quite a bit of time on this podcast talking about the need for quality in fixed income, the need for higher quality bonds. Interesting to see something that we've been talking about now for so long, that some of the firms that go out and try to analyze things, try to analyze funds, maybe piling on a little bit finally. You have Morningstar, which, a very independent research firm. We're fond of using their research. We're fond of using some of their tools to report to our own customers about what it is they hold. Has gone out and said it's not enough anymore to simply say that this is an intermediate-term bond. So not enough to say that this is a bond that holds, or a bond fund that holds, a certain duration or a certain a type of bond that fits into a certain maturity. Now we're breaking those bonds out into which of those are higher quality and which of those are maybe a bit more speculative. And so you've got Morningstar starting to understand, and I think you'll see others as well, that there's more nuance to the fixed income markets. There's a big difference between that stuff, which should be considered core, which is what Morningstar is now calling kind of the holdings that should be the foundation for your bond portfolio, and those things that are core plus. And so, you know, this is a conversation, Brian, Adam, I know you've had with clients about the need for quality in your bond portfolios. You know, I think as we get more sophisticated in our conversations, as Morningstar comes out and supports us in those, in that dialogue, I wonder how that's going to fit into what you do.
Well, I don't think it's going to change investment portfolios so much as it really changes how we're able to dissect and drill down on specific areas. You know, at this point in the business cycle, you need to be focusing on high-quality bonds. And it, changing some of the categories and adding some the way Morningstar is doing, it gives us the ability to really drill down on that.
You know, I love just finding different things to talk to clients about, you know, and one of the things that you should be talking about now is credit quality. And, you know, how often can you have a compelling conversation with your client about credit quality? But I think now is a really good time to do that because there are some potential red flags ahead and dangers ahead, and this Morningstar perhaps recognizing that, but you always have to go back to what are you trying to do, you know? And if I'm trying for that part of your portfolio to keep this thing safe, and I'm willing to hedge another 0.25% or 0.5%, you know, in interest to make a little bit more money, and I'm giving up that safety, that's just the wrong thing to do, you know? And I think what you're finding in that triple B space and some of the investment grade quality stuff that's on the lower side of investment grade quality is if people are tiptoeing down there, they're setting themselves up for problems. And here's a way, Kyle, maybe to elevate our ability to make sure that's not happening to people.
Joel, a number of economic reports this week. Obviously, I think a few that stand out to me, but I wonder what you know, what's on your short list.
Well, I saw a couple of good things, a couple of bad things. The things that point to continued growth in the economy that are there month after month. One was the job openings numbers from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. For the 13th month in a row, we've had more job openings listed by employers than we've had unemployed people looking for work in the country. That's not something that's happened often in the time that they've covered these data, and it's happened now for 13 months in a row. The other part of that is the jobless claims. You know, we're again, we're around 50-year lows as far as the number of people leaving their employers and requiring insurance for it. And if you think of 50 years ago, we've got a much bigger population now. So that's really saying something. So those two things are saying that there's a real need for workers, and that should you know, make workers more empowered, maybe get them higher wages so that they're consuming more, spending more as consumers. And the other side of the coin is that we had numbers on consumer credit that showed that credit card debt actually kind of sunk a little in March. And also the inflation numbers, the consumer price index, came out today. And that showed that inflation just isn't as hot as you'd expect it to be with a labor situation like that.
And some data on producer prices earlier in the week as well, suggesting that maybe the front end of that also isn't supporting inflation. And so, you know, maybe the one catch in some of the inflation data will be what happens with these tariffs, where we see some of those, some of that additional cost come down. That could maybe push inflation a little bit. And at the same time, you know, I think we've been waiting for so long for inflation now that, you know, I'm not expecting much there.
Uh-oh. Now it's the time. That's when it's coming. You know, I thought it was interesting. You know, I take interest in the strangest things sometimes, but credit card debt going down. Now, there's something we haven't seen in a long time, you know, and I think it's kind of interesting later in the cycle with some of these other things. I mean, we've been worried about a fair amount of stuff for a year or two now, and that now people are kind of maybe kind of making sure their credit card debt is under control and everything. And I always find it a really good sign when people, you know, are more prudent in their own house, you know, and I think, you know, were there to be trouble ahead, that's going to be something that keeps us out of more trouble.
Right, it's a double-edged sword. Yeah, on the one hand, it's good for those families that they're keeping their household debt down. On the other side is the economy, because we want people to spend money.
I think it points to some lessons learned from the financial crisis, right? That was one of the big issues, is you had all these people over-leveraged in terms of consumer credit, all these people over-leveraged in terms of the house that they had bought. You know, maybe the businesses were in a little bit better shape then, outside of some of the banks that didn't understand their exposure. I think today it's a little bit of a different story, though, that it tends to be the households that are in much better shape financially. On the other hand, you know, what are the concerns as we look ahead? It's maybe some of those businesses that we talked about earlier when we were talking about credit quality, that those are the ones that may be a little overly levered now. And so, you know, encouraging, you know, as you mentioned, to see some consumer credit data that points to, you know, that what we've kind of been seeing. You know, outside of that, we've gotten some additional news on earnings, I think worth pointing out that we've been talking now for the better part of a couple months about the likelihood of an earnings recession. Depending on who you look at, maybe we're not going to see a decline in earnings here in the first quarter. You have FactSet pointing still to a negative number, but Thompson now saying, you know, maybe we're out of it. And so, you know, I think it just depends on how you view those numbers. But it's looking like it might not be as bad as what we thought originally. And I think what's so important, you know, Brian, as you mentioned, the 16% that we're up for the S&P, the markets had moved past that, the possibility of an earnings recession, long before we ever were really into getting those numbers reported. And so, you know, it's all about earnings and interest rates. Interest rates down a little bit this week. Earnings, as we look ahead, should be, you know, coming back to growth here after a couple of quarters. And so, you know, Brian, Adam, any closing thoughts with that or anything else in mind?
I guess at least for in terms of earnings for the, you know, full year 2019, still expect to be a positive year. You know, earnings growth up 3.3%, revenue growth up 4.7%. So I think the market has looked past what has just been a little slow patch, first and second quarter, looking ahead to what's coming down the pike.
We'll talk about China because it's popular, but it's earnings at the end of the day and what impact China has on earnings. So I think for now, being somewhat reassured, you know, at the end of first quarter earnings season, that's the good news for the week. And we'll probably have a few ups and downs yet with this China thing, so don't get too excited in the short run.
Well, your Milwaukee Brewers are on a roll. Your Milwaukee Bucks are in the Eastern Conference Finals. I think, you know, we got potentially a couple MVPs here now in the city, and one more that seems to be coming down to all the Bucks games and Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. So, you know, if you're a sports fan, if you're looking for something to do this summer, I think we're right on the verge of some pretty exciting times. So thanks for listening to the show. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.